John Tomasi. He's a columnist with WEEI.com. Wrote what I thought was the most interesting column on the whole situation. And part of that reason is, as you well know, that I'm kind of one of those people who thinks, you know, David Price might be a little bit of a $3 bill. And I have not seen anything in Boston that gets me to change my mind. So let's bring on John Tomasi. John, it was a terrific column. You know, it's one thing to say that, well, the guy's got communication issues, as David Dombrowski seemed to suggest with John Farrell. But another thing to really point out that at the heart of this seems to be that David Price and Dustin Pedroia, I mean, that this clubhouse just didn't have John Farrell's back. I put it this way: I have a hard time seeing the Red Sox doing for John Farrell what the Yankees did for Joe Girardi.
No, and you know that, Jeff. That's what struck me when you saw guys after that Yankee game last night saying we did this for Joe. There was none of that with the Red Sox, and you know we asked Dustin Pedroia after they were eliminated. Straight out, the question was, after a season like this, the manager's job security comes into question. Do you think John should be back next year? He could not bring himself to say yes, and I just thought that was telling. It became a sort of roundabout answer of how proud they were, of how everybody didn't, you know, fought to the end and didn't give up and all that kind of stuff. And you just didn't find any guys in there who were willing to stick their neck out for Farrell, and I think Price is a big reason. He was by far the most influential voice in an otherwise young clubhouse, and he had a corrupting influence, I really think, unfortunately, on a lot of these guys. And I'm interested to hear what you thought about his years in Toronto, or year in Toronto, because he arrived in Boston with this reputation, team guy and all of this, and then when you saw how it played out, it was really the exact opposite.
I mean, I've told people... Look, he's a smart guy. He's a great interview. I think he pulled the wool over some people's eyes in Toronto into actually believing he was going to re-sign here. I mean, I can tell you that there are people who worked with Alex Anthopoulos who told me the day the deal was made, Jeff, there's no chance in hell this guy is coming back, and we don't expect him to come back. I mean, we expect him to walk. The other thing is, after he did leave, you know, there were a couple of off-season availabilities with Blue Jays players, and I had one guy come up to me and say, do me a favor. Please stop talking about, oh, my God, how are we ever going to move on from David Price? He was a great pitcher. The fact is he didn't do much for us in the postseason. He certainly wasn't the clubhouse presence that a lot of people thought he was. I had this player tell me, you know what the best thing David Price did when he was with the Blue Jays is he kind of sucked so much of the media over to his locker during the playoffs that he allowed us to have a little bit of our space. So, yeah, I don't think that David Price is everything people have made him out to be. I really don't.
Yeah, that's my take. We saw that in Boston. You know, there are a number of young players, and I know there are some concerns, you know, among the coaching staff. When you see Andrew Benintendi, a young guy, young impressionable guy, at Price's locker a lot. Eduardo Rodriguez was another one. You know, Robbie Ross before he got hurt. So there are a number of guys who really seem sort of under Price's thrall. And the problem is, you all know the story of Dennis Eckersley, Hall of Fame broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, I cannot more strongly enough get across to you how popular Eckersley is in Boston. This is a guy who overcame all kinds of personal demons. He's been very outspoken about it, you know, alcoholism and all that kind of stuff. He resurrected his career. He overcame the Kirk Gibson home run, the whole thing. This is a beloved figure in Boston. And when Price went after him, that really changed the tenor of everything. Because up until that point, the great irony is David Price had no idea what it was like to be criticized in Boston, because he had been treated pretty gently, all things considered, for a $217 million guy who once again flamed out in the postseason, who did not deliver the season. It wasn't a bad debut season, but it certainly wasn't to the level the Red Sox expected. He did not face the kind of scrutiny or criticism that guys like Carl Crawford and John Lackey and Josh Beckett, and, I mean, you can go back to Mark Bellhorn, guys who aren't even star players, who just got absolutely crushed. He didn't face any of that, and yet he was so defiant and so thin-skinned and so, you know, sensitive and sort of narcissistic about all of this stuff that it really permeated the entire clubhouse. And when you talk about Farrell's hold on the clubhouse, the fact that he didn't apologize to Eckersley, even though he knew with every fiber of his being that what Price did was wrong, you know, dressing him down on a plane and sort of ambushing him in front of the entire team. Farrell knew that was wrong. And the fact that he didn't apologize tells me that he knew he was in such an unwinnable position. If he apologized to David Price and word of that got back to the clubhouse, which it inevitably would have, he would have lost the entire team. What does that tell you about the makeup of that Red Sox clubhouse?
And I'll tell you something else, too. I really wonder, John, if looking back at that whole incident with Manny Machado and you know, that shot of Dustin Pedroia in the dugout, you know, gesturing at Manny Machado and appearing to say, hey, this isn't me, this is them, and pointing down towards where the manager and the coaching staff were. You know, the visuals of that were so bad. And did you guys ever kind of get to the bottom of that? I mean, maybe you did and I missed it, but man, that sure looked to me like a player basically saying, hey, don't look at me. Look at the guys down there at the end making the decision.
Yeah, I think your instincts are good on that one. You know, it was never, I don't think it was ever concretely explained, but certainly it's not hard when you talk to some of the players and you talk in particular to some of the pitchers who you thought, well, basically, Pedroia is either calling out his coaching staff or his pitching staff. It's one of the two, right? And when you talk to the pitchers and you talk to the guys involved like Matt Barnes, they don't think Pedroia was talking about them. So that really only leaves one option. It leaves John Farrell and his staff. And that was such a terrible look for Pedroia, who really had a rough year from, you know, a clubhouse standpoint. This is somebody who a lot of people thought would step into that leadership void left by David Ortiz retiring. And I think what we learned is it's not really in Pedroia's nature. He's a lead by example guy. He's a play hard guy, but I think he's also been worn down by years and years and years of Boston. I'm sure you know Johnny Miller, the radio reporter for WBZ, longtime fixture, who revels in asking the most negative questions. And I think that kind of stuff has worn Pedroia down over the years. And so not only did you have that incident with the Orioles, but you also had, you know, after the Price thing, nobody stood up and told him he should apologize. And it took a month for Pedroia to finally stand up and have this sort of mildly showboating press conference at his locker where he said, you say we don't have leaders. I'm standing here right now. I'm a leader. And it's like, well, where have you been for the last month? Why didn't you stop this thing before it happened? So, and right to his last game, you know, his last act was to get John Farrell ejected from game 4 of the ALDS because Pedroia wouldn't stop arguing a third strike when he left a bat on his shoulder. And so it was just a rough year for Pedroia from start to finish.
One of the other things I would remind people, too, that it was John Farrell who managed the Toronto Blue Jays when Yanel Escobar took the field with his homophobic slurs written on his eye black. And you know, I'm not laying that at John Farrell's feet by any stretch of the imagination, but you know what? That was a clubhouse that had a supposed veteran presence in Omar Vizquel, and Omar Vizquel would certainly know what the hell those words meant. And nobody stepped up. I mean, it was a clubhouse that was really, it wasn't dysfunctional. It just appeared to be on cruise control, and it appeared as if the cruise control wasn't functioning at any point during the season. Very quickly, we've only got you for a couple of minutes here. I do want to ask you, John Farrell's replacement. There's a variety of names out there. I'm intrigued by a guy like Jason Varitek, but man, I think if you're David Dombrowski, you've got to bring somebody in with a bit of a pedigree here, don't you?
Yeah, I will tell you right now, there is zero chance of Varitek being Red Sox manager. Dave Dombrowski is already on record. It's not going to be someone from the organization, almost certainly. He wants someone with managing experience in the minors, maybe, but definitely big league coaching experience. Varitek doesn't have any of that stuff. Those of us who covered Varitek, I don't think he'd be the greatest communicator if that's what you're looking for right now. So if you're looking at former Red Sox players, I think the name that everyone is talking about in Boston right now, and I know the Red Sox have started to dig in on, is Alex Cora, you know, Houston's bench coach. He's got ties to Boston because he played here. He's well-respected throughout the game, as you know.
Yes.
And he would be a guy, if you're going to go the former player route who hasn't managed, I think he would be high on their list.
We're going to let you run, John. Great as always, and terrific column. Really well written, and as I said, brought a smile to my face when I read it. It's nice to know.
Well, I appreciate it.
It's nice to know.
I hope I didn't ramble too much.
No. It's just nice to know that when you kind of have an idea that's outside the box, or an idea that other people may kind of think, you know, you haven't really thought out all that well, it's nice to read somebody you admire expressing the same sentiment. So I really appreciate that.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.